So this one is a lesson now for all lovers. And this one is called Cat Lessons. I have been taught not to bring my rich red heart to you. Not by anything you ever said, but by how you looked at it, as you look at the dead mice and rats that cat brings home so joyously every now and again. Come to think of it, can you remember her last fresh kill? She has been taught well, and now all you ever see of her is her smooth curved back curled round her head in sleep, or her tail vanishing up the garden path. The next series is a series of five poems, and they're written with the title being the person who's speaking. And it came out of an interest I have in the stories that we tell ourselves, and this particular batch is from the Bible. So it's a Christian story from the Old Testament. So we're talking about the three main religions in the world. And most of you will probably know the story. If not, you don't really need to know the story. Sarah. I know my beauty, but it is less than worthless, for I am barren. There will be no son for him, no infant for me to love. I have gone to wise men, talked to my cousins, my friends. They all say the same. I am too old now to bear a child, let alone a son. There is little choice. I will follow the custom, give him a servant. The child is all that matters, and I will have it for my own. I'll give him Hagar, my Egyptian handmaiden. I'll leave him alone. At night, I will close my ears, praying to God for a son. Abraham. I took Sarah's girl. It is an accepted custom, and I need a son. Hagar comes to me at night, when darkness covers her skin. She is very smooth, very taut. My organ had to push hard into tightness, wetness, that first night. I hope it will take some time for her to conceive. I have shown her how to tease me with her mouth, how she can sit on top of me, how she used to arch her back and pull her hips back and forth. I can lie quite still, letting her do all the work. I am an old man, but my God, she makes me feel so young. Hagar. I was told to go to the old master's bedroom. I belong to them. They have owned me my whole life, and I have nowhere to run. The others just laughed, told me I would have comfort if I performed well enough to keep them happy. They said it would not be hard, and my position in the household would improve. Sarah said I should understand, should be grateful. It is she who betrayed me. I did not want it, but every night he has me with the flame blown out. Every night as he takes me, my hatred for his God grows. Ishmael. Father drove me out when I was 13 years old, exiled Hagar too. I am outcast, unwanted. But I have found my own way. I am told Isaac is a good, obedient son. The poor child is left very little choice, it seems. I heard the tale of father's faithful sacrifice, and I'm rejoicing nightly in my outcast state. If he had kept me bastard, I would be used as a ram. Instead, I will lead my own people to greatness. I have many sons, and each will lead in his turn. God has promises to keep. Isaac. They chose me a wife, a woman of high standing. She is Rebecca, and I have come to love her, not for me, my father's root. I will never sire an Ishmael to throw away. I often wonder where he is, how his life goes. I will not leave him dead. At times I wonder, had he been here, would father's hand have stopped in time? Would he have made a scapegoat of a younger son instead? I am Rebecca's, and I will have no other. Will not use custom, no matter how they urge me. God will give to us a son. I'm going to finish off on another series that I wrote, and this was about kind of self-explanatory. It's based on an article that I read, so a lot of it is factually true, and it's called Imitatio Dei in San Quentin, number one. watch lieutenant. I check with the watch officers all through the night, watch the tenseness develop in the way Jimmy cracks his knuckles, the way Dawn's right eye twitches. At 8 minutes to 10, I unlock his cell, ask him to take off his clothes. He knows exactly what to do. I give him blue jeans and a white shirt. We all keep a careful distance apart, so conscious of nearness that our limbs become mechanized, straight and only one-jointed. Our arms stuck to our sides and our legs taking slow, deliberate steps. We tend to stare just past one another, keep our sentences short and soft-spoken. My whole body aches for days afterward. Chamber operator. Somebody has to do it. If it's not me, it'll be somebody else. And at least I'm just doing a job, not like some in this business. It's the warden who orders me. At 2:30 past 10, I remove the safety pin and depress the mechanical action. Cyanide gas is released from the chamber. It's much more humane than the chair, you know. I wouldn't upgrade the chair. Don't much like lethal injection either. Too many needles. Too many ways to make a mistake. Imagine missing the vein. As for the firing squad, yep, it still exists. They did it a couple of years back in Utah, I think. People just don't like it. Barbaric, I suppose. Too much blood and guts leaking out. No, gas is the best way. Official witness. I covered Somalia a few years ago, so thought this would be easy. But fuck, the violence is worse here. Over there it was random. Just a bunch of thugs with guns. Here, everyone knows how it's going to happen, where it's going to happen, when it's going to happen. And everyone just waits for the show. To get through it, I focus on how everyone else reacts. I check the clock. I look at the guards' faces. Watch who's coming through the door. Stopwatch how long it all takes. One thing for sure. It's all made to look as unlike murder as possible. Warden. I know these men's cases inside out. I'm aware of every exhausted appeal. When it is time, I order the execution to proceed. I am only the mouthpiece of the state, making sure the will of the people is done. Medical officer. I only do this because it's part of my job, and usually my job allows me to help these guys. It only takes 30 seconds before he's unconscious. 10 minutes later, I confirm he's dead. I complete his death certificate. So, the old physical and I'll do one last one just to leave on a slightly lighter note. When all that's left is the desire to be touched, you must wonder what happened before, why the need is so great, the body so all-consuming. When did the touching stop? Why has frustration mapped itself on love? Why are words not enough? Why must tongues be used for licking, sucking, gently kneading, but not for talking? When all that's left is the desire to be touched, you must wonder what is being missed. How was the body touched? Who handled it? How did hands and tongue coax wildness, bring joy? How did backs arch and legs wrap? How did parts fit? How did nights turn into journeys but daylight never stopped? When all that's left is the desire to be touched, you must wonder what has been lost. How was the body nourished love? How did the motion of skin on skin, tongue on skin, fight past the decades-drenched loneliness to splice the raw rope of solitude with a heart that's been burned a richer colored pink? Thank you very much.